Welcome to this podcast. It's making me thirsty, the number one destination for Seinfeld fans. This is episode 165. Today's guest is an actress, comedian, and writer. You know her from Whitney, Tootsie, and The Prisoner of Second Avenue. Her essays have appeared in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times. She's written and starred in two solo shows. She's a TikTok sensation with 400,000 followers and over 10 million likes. Her first book is entitled Bargain Junkie, Living the Good Life on the Cheap. And her new book, The Book of Annie, is available now. And of course, she was in four Seinfeld episodes, in three of which she played Jack Klompas's wife, Doris Klompas. Please welcome Annie Corzin. Annie, thanks for joining.
Thanks. Those credits are so ancient. I wonder where you got them. Whitney? No. My recent credits were I did Pen 15. That's a hot show. Pen 15 and The Shrink Next Door. You know, more recent. I have done more recent stuff up until the strike.
Well, Annie, welcome to the number one destination for Seinfeld fans. And get the book. It's unbelievable, people. Yay. Get it at Amazon, local bookstores, the whole thing. All right, so Annie,
yeah.
Bronx born, the whole thing. We love you. 1991, you get the call from NBC to appear as Jack Klompas's wife.
Yes.
How'd the role come about? Tell us a little bit about Dara.
Actually, what happened was, I got a call from my agent saying he had this little job on this new show. Nobody knew much about it. And a better known actress had booked it, had been offered it. And she turned it down because she felt the role was too small. And I'm a very, a modest bit player. I just take whatever comes along. They said, are you interested? I said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And I auditioned and I got the job.
Wow, that's incredible.
And then when I did it, this was 1991, it was The Pen, the classic episode of The Pen. And when we watched it, and I had never seen or heard of the show, and we watched it at home, and my husband said, well, yeah, I don't get it. It's not about anything. Famous last words, right? And now he never misses a day without seeing at least two or three episodes every night. At least two or three episodes a night.
Incredible. Your husband, Benny?
My husband, Benny, yeah.
Wow.
Incredible. And for the record, we gave The Pen an A+, one of our favorite episodes of all time, and mainly due to you and the whole cast of characters down there in Florida. Your husband there, Jack, played brilliantly by Sandy Baron. So take us through, I think it's casted perfectly. I've said this a million times. The roles of all of the players there in Florida are great, especially you. The way you just, you go to Morty, she's adorable as you're leaving, talking about Elaine. It's like,
It's funny you should mention that because actually I improvised that line. And Sandy Baron was a little bossy as a husband. And he took me, he's like, you can't say that. It's not in the script. I said, yeah, but it fits. And Larry liked it. Everything there went by Larry. He was the decider. And he came over. He said, I like that. Keep it in.
I'm so glad to hear that because I think it's the line. It's exactly what everyone in your position would do. I've met that person a million times. They meet the girl. And she wasn't even his girlfriend, but you don't know. What do you know? She's there. It's Jerry's girl. She's adorable.
Yeah. No, I'm the matchmaking Yenta type. Right.
Yes. That's so great. And you're right. It wasn't a big hit at the time. It was the 20th episode that aired. And,
It was. And so I didn't know it was going to recur. It was very pleasant. You said, oh, they want you back again. They have another episode. That was really nice. And I think the moral is just say yes to everything. You don't know what anything's going to lead to. I am still collecting residuals after all these years. It's a regular thing in my mailbox. I mean, I hate to be so crass and talk about money, but actors, TV actors count on those residuals. That's a big part of the income that we count on. So I'm very glad. I said, the only problem I had was I had moved recently from New York and I was and still am the world's worst driver. And I had to figure out how to get myself from where we lived to Burbank. And I got lost and I found myself on the Hollywood freeway, and I don't do freeways because I don't drive over 32 miles an hour. So I literally, and there were like 5 lanes, and my exit, and the exit was the next exit. So in rush hour traffic going 32 miles an hour, I had to cross 5 lanes to get out. And it is a miracle that I'm alive today. I risked my life, but it was worth it. That job changed my life in all kinds of ways.
For sure it did. And speaking of it, you talk about Seinfeld a lot in the book here. The Book of Annie, like I said, get it at your local bookstore. Your husband, not Benny, but Sandy Baron. I mean, unbelievable. Tell us a little bit about maybe some backstories. I know there's a story in the book about him dating a blind woman, the whole thing. Tell us a little bit about that and just what it was like working with Jack Klompas.
Well, in the beginning, I hated him because he was very bossy and moving. As I said, you can't say that. Or he would say, okay, when I leave, you leave. He kept directing me, which I did not appreciate. But then we kind of got friendly. And then he did tell me the story about somebody setting him up on a blind date with a woman who turned out actually to be blind. And he said it was the best sex of his life. And there was something about that story I liked. So we were friendly from then. After that story, we kind of hung out a little. It was okay.
Oh,
it
that's
was not
great.
Love, definitely not love at first sight.
Yeah. And it's funny because you mentioned you came back, right, for the next episode. And the next, you didn't come back as Doris, right? You came back in the airport episode on the plane with Elaine.
Yeah, but I think that was later on. I think I had already done Doris a couple of times. And then they asked me to come in and do a second character, which was nice.
Yeah. And we were looking through your episodes. You know, Larry David wrote the bulk of the episodes you were in, which probably is a good sign, right? If he's pulling you in, like you said, he's a decision maker. And I'm guessing it had a lot to do with that initial "she's adorable" line. Larry loved it. Now he's bringing
it. Who knows? Right? Yeah. You never know what makes something work or what makes people like you. But yes, they were very kind to me and they were very nice. They were nice guys. It was a nice set to be around. People were nice to each other.
Sure. And speaking of that, the raincoats, the episode where you're yelling at Jack, which is great too. He should be down at his knees. You're yelling at him, you know, when he's trying to get the raincoats for more.
He had nothing better to do.
Like, what was that? Was an hour long episode packed with guest stars, Judge Reinhold, the whole thing.
Oh,
I know it's a long time ago and all that, but do you remember, like, for that hour long episode, were you on, did they have you on set for that whole week, even though, you know, you were kind of off with Jack in Florida? Were you able to kind of be there for a lot of those tapings and kind of get to know, like, Jason and Michael and Jerry as well?
That's a good question. No, I don't think I was there for the whole week. I think they just brought me in for my scenes, but I did get to know the others because Jason, I actually, after everything was over and the show was no longer on the air, Jason played the lead in a theater out here of Neil Simon's Prisoner of Second Avenue, and I played one of his sisters. So we hung out there, and it was fun. I like him. I liked all those people. I mean, of course, they were all characters. Estelle was a real character, and Estelle, she had this, you know, she talked like this, but she always had a kind of a stinger. So I'd run into her on the street. She'd say, "Hi, Annie, how are you?" And I'd say, "I'm great, Estelle," and blah, blah, blah. She said, "What's going on?" I said, "Well, I wrote this solo show, and I'm kind of excited because there's this famous Broadway producer. What's his name? I can't think of his name right now. This famous Broadway producer is interested in possibly producing it." And she goes, "Oh, that's wonderful. I never really cared for him."
Brutal honesty, right?
You know, kind of, you know, she'd give you a little love and then a little hate. She was like that.
It was unbelievable. And, you know, the crazy thing is, and, you know, that first episode, you were 53 years young, you know, playing the retiree down in Florida. You know, 53, you look great.
I think when they hired me, they said, "You're too young for this, but we will age you." So they used age makeup. It looks a little weird to me. When I look at it, it looks kind of strange, but they did use age makeup. I was younger than they wanted, which was flattering. It meant that they wanted me so badly, they would actually go through all that trouble.
Yeah, and that first episode, it's an interesting one. It's the only episode without Michael Richards and Jason. So, you know, it caused quite a stir. Did you feel any of that on set, or you were just kind of brand new to it? And obviously, you didn't watch the show.
The show becoming a success?
No, just, you know, without them there, was that noticeable? I know it was the
first
one.
At that time, I didn't know because I had never watched the show.
Right.
I didn't know anything about it, so I didn't. Later on, they were all there, and it was interesting. What happens in a show like that, and if you've read the book or listened to the book, this is not newsy. When you come on, as I did, as a guest player, there are certain, it's a hierarchy. So the principal cast, they eat together. And even if you're in the same room, you do not bring your tray over to their table unless they ask you to. Or if you're sitting next to them in makeup, you do not strike up a conversation unless they start it. I mean, you just kind of, so your job really is to hit your marks, say your lines, do your job, which is very hard for me because I'm somebody who likes to be included and who likes to party and who likes to feel that I'm an insider. But since I did the show several times, I did eventually get friendly with the people and hang out with them. And yes, I did sit at the table, you know, with the principals. But you have to be, it's a delicate dance when you're in that position, especially as the show got more and more successful, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you fit right in. You feel like a glove with that crew, and I think Larry sees that, right? I mean, I'm sure he's met someone like you 100 times over, right? That's like you said, the character and everything. So that's great to hear. And I love the fact that Larry and Jerry kind of introduced that generation to our generation. You know, the Len Lessers and the Sandy Barons, right? We didn't know these guys growing up like maybe other generations. Right. It was great that we got to see them. And speaking of that, you bring it up in your book how, you know, talking about the family and kind of getting in at the table, when you run into Jerry at the restaurant, right? And he calls you over in front of your friends and lets everyone
right,
know.
Right, right, right.
That's a great story.
It was when I started to realize that being on that show had given me it had raised my stock somewhat. I wasn't quite aware of it, but I'm sitting in the restaurant with my husband and a real player, a Hollywood player, big time director, who always had nothing to say to me. He would just talk to my husband. You know, I was just, he would introduce me. And this is Benny's wife. But we were in that restaurant and I see somebody at the other end of the room waving, say, Hi, Annie. And I didn't know who it was. I got up and I go over and it's Jerry having dinner with a friend. And he's just a nice guy. He just wanted to say hello. But when I walked back to my table, I realized that everyone in the restaurant was looking at me as if I were somebody important. And after that night, my big time director friend, he would always say to people, and this is my dear friend, Annie Corson. You must know her from Seinfeld. So all of a sudden, I was somebody. You know, and in this town, all those little things. Yes, when I started, I kept auditioning. I still was not much more than a bit player, but there was something about having a bunch of Seinfeld shows on my resume that kind of just got me a little more respect from the casting people. It did a lot for me in that sense.
Yeah, and then you fast forward 30 years later, and you're a TikTok star, right? I mean, you got thrown into Seinfeld, and now you have that. Tell us about how that whole TikTok thing came about, Annie.
You know, in a way, it's like the Seinfeld story. My motto is just say, "Yeah, why not?" So when they asked me if I want to do the Seinfeld, I thought, "Yeah, why not? It's a job." TikTok, I knew nothing about. I still know nothing about it. I have a young friend, a very young friend. She's 30. And I told her, you know, and I do solo shows. I've done them all over the world, and I do storytelling. But in LA, if you're a storyteller or you have a solo show, you're lucky if you get 70 people in the audience. It's a sold-out night, okay? And I said to her, you know, I think I'm smart. I think I'm funny. I think I have something to say. I wish I could find a larger audience. And she said, well, Oh, no, no. And I said to her, I'm thinking of putting some little clips up on Instagram. Maybe that would, you know. And she said, oh, Instagram, that is so toxic. That is so last century. Remember, she's 30 years old, okay? She says, you have to do TikTok. And me, TikTok? TikTok is for, you know, young girls who putting on makeup, shaking their booty. Why would anybody? Trust me, she said, you would go viral. And that's exactly what happened. And I do not understand it. And what I also don't understand is I'm an older urban Jewish woman. And I've always thought that's my audience. My audience is older urban Jewish women. It turns out not to be the case. I was totally wrong about that. When I get stopped on the street, it's my college kids and high school kids or young, you know, young studio people. It's a whole other. And I said to Mackenzie, I do not understand it. What is it that they're seeing? What is it that they're seeing in me? And she says, she uses the word authentic. I don't know what that means, but apparently I am.
We agree. I mean, that's,
and I have a kind of a wisdom, and I hope I encourage people, and I just speak my truth about whatever it is. For some reason, it seems to be, I'll tell you, my favorite comment of all my TikTok, and I love the comments. I have to precede this with something about show business. In Hollywood, if there were a casting call today for an older, attractive woman, I would never be seen for that role. I am not Hollywood's idea of an older, attractive woman, largely because I'm too Jewish looking. In Hollywood, for women, not men, for women, Jewish looking means ugly. So I have, all my life, I have been told I'm too Jewy looking, I'm not attractive. I've also been told I talk too much, I'm too opinionated. These are the things I have been accused of for years. Suddenly I'm in this place, TikTok, where people tell me I'm beautiful, like my opinions, respond to what I have to say. It's very odd to me that everything I've been told all my life, which is so negative about me, turns out not to really be the case, at least not with this younger generation. And they call me queen, and they call me iconic. And the best comment I ever got was, this kid wrote in, I do not understand how it is I relate so well to a Jewish American woman in her 80s. I am an Afghan boy of 16. That just blew me. That just knocked me out. That's just not, isn't that something?
It's funny, Annie, your description of yourself was kind of the description of Seinfeld back in the day. It's too Jewish. It's too urban. But at the end of the day,
That's a brilliant comment. I didn't think of that, but you're absolutely right. And you know, by the way, the people who make those remarks, who say Jewish women looking or Jewish looking women are ugly or Jewish shoulders are Jewish men. This is not anti-Semitism. It's, I don't know what you call it. It is Jewish men who make those.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you know, even Jerry said this. He goes, I don't care what the critics say. The audience keeps responding to this, just like that Afghan kid's responding to you, right? So at the end of the day, funny's funny, whether you're a kid from Afghan or you're, you know, a Jewish woman from the Bronx, right? So, and I think that's what Seinfeld got. I think that's what Larry saw in you and Jerry saw in you. And that's why they kept bringing you back. I mean, you were in, four of the best episodes, potentially of all time.
You know, I was lucky, wasn't I? I think so.
I know you and Benny watch it every night there, but...
he does more than I do. He does.
Yeah, he better start watching his podcast too, but... what's your favorite of the four? Obviously, the Dara stuff is classic.
The four that I did?
Yeah.
The pen, the Cadillac. What was the other one? Oh, the raincoats. I don't know. I guess the pen, just because it was something about being down there in Boca with those people, I suppose. I said to somebody, what's your favorite all-time episode? I was trying to think. For me, it's the Korean manicure place with Bette Midler.
Really? Huh.
That's my
favorite. Frank, yeah.
Where were Frank?
I can see Frank. That being. Yeah.
I mean, I love him. And I know I'm friendly with his daughter, Amy Stiller. But I loved him as a person. He was a very erudite and interesting. By the way, I want to say, may I ask permission to say why do you think, no, I shouldn't say that because you already know what I think. May I share with your audience the reason I think that Seinfeld found such a universal audience? Because everyone was always trying to figure that out. Why? Why did the show go viral? Why did it go global? And I think there are two reasons. First of all, the characters do things that normal people would never do. They have no boundaries, right? So they do things and they say things that are so crazy. I mean, that it gives the rest of us this fantasy that, oh boy, if we had the freedom to be that real, to be that nuts, to just not censor. They do not censor themselves the way normal people do. But the real reason, I think, is that people want to share that half hour with them is because basically they are not very nice people, are they? I mean, they're narcissists and they're selfish and they're thoughtless and they're not always honest. They're not, you know, solid, upstanding citizens in any way. They lie, they cheat, and with each other, they steal from each other. But no matter what they do to each other, no matter what they say to each other, they always forgive and forget and move on. And that's what we all want. We want people to accept us for who we are. With our faults, we might be bald, we might be fat, we might slide when we walk in the door and eat all your food in your refrigerator, but we want that to be accepted and forgiven. And the love goes on. The love stays. There's never a question of this friendship is over. That is not a possibility in that show. No one is going to say that to anybody. And that's what we all want. So in the end, the show that's about nothing, I think, is a show that's about family. And if Larry David heard me say this, he would vomit. Because he doesn't think that way. He doesn't like sentiment. He doesn't like happy endings or sentiment, or he doesn't like that kind of stuff. He just wants to be honest in how he sees the world. But I do believe that that's what pulls people in. That's what we all want.
Well said. I mean, well said, and couldn't agree more.
Do you believe that?
I think it's 100% true. We talk about it all the time. We analyze a lot of these episodes. We talk to hundreds of guest stars. And at the root of it, it's the loyalty and the friendship. And that's what you're talking about.
It's the loyalty and the friendship. Absolutely.
Yeah, they always have each other's backs. And you know, you're right. Larry says no hugging, and that's kind of the show. You know, but it's built into the way that, like you said, it's still there. He just doesn't overtly show them hugging and saying, you know, but it's there in their relationship, like you said. And you hit the nail on the head. And it really has to do with the whole family of everyone. You know, it's Jack Klompas. It's you. It's Uncle Leo. It's Newman. Even Newman they like, right? Mm-hmm. So it's you're right, and that's what the show was. And in the heart of it, they had loyalty to even the actors, not just the people they were portraying, such as yourself. So I think it was very well said. And to go back to your original point about TikTok, I think you're right. I think authenticity is what it is. And I think that's what your character was. I mean, as authentic as it gets of a, like you said, a Jewish woman down in Florida. You know, I had the scampi and just the whole thing. I mean, it's exactly.
But you know my lies more than I do.
Oh, I mean, you're lying.
But you know, it's funny because you're giving my character much more importance than I ever gave it. I always figured, you know, in that show, for the most part, the women are there as foils for the men. The scenes are really about the men always. So my scenes are not about me. They're about Jack, you know, but he needs a wife. So I'm the wife. Estelle started, you know, Estelle was only hired for that one of the great episodes, the masturbation episode, right? She wants a corned beef. Can you get me? I need a corned beef sandwich. And when she's in the hospital, remember? and they loved her so much that they brought her back. But she said to me, well, yeah, they brought me back. And then what do? They bring me a husband. And then all the scenes are about the husband. And if you think about it, that's really true. I'm trying to think of other couples.
Yeah. You know what? I don't like that you're thinking that, because I think, you know, whether it's Evelyn, Elaine, I think you guys played a real prominent part there for sure.
Elaine certainly did.
Yeah, but and Liz Sheridan. I mean, I think they needed the balance for sure, and I think the women for sure stood out, and Dara's one being one of them. Absolutely.
Really? I always felt I was very insignificant. Listen, I'm not complaining. I was happy to do it. But I'm surprised that you know as many of my lines.
Yelling at Jack Klompas about the boxes, I mean, that if you're not there, it's just Jack Klompas on
boxes?
The phone, right?
What is he bothering you with boxes?
Right. That's exactly what would be happening. I'm picturing you two down in Florida. You're in your robe. You have your tea. What's he doing with the boxes? You know, I mean, we've all seen this 100 times. You know, that happens. The husband's on the phone helping his friend now. The wife comes in. Don't help me. I mean, you got to be there. If you're not there, doesn't work. I'm telling you.
I think it's funny. I appreciate this. You're giving me a lot more importance than I ever gave myself.
Yeah, in the Cadillac, you know, the early bird, it's better than Danny's. Jack's not Jack without Doris. Plain and simple. So
that's an interesting way to put it. Okay, I appreciate that. You're making me feel, hey, maybe I should get more in those residuals. Maybe I should raise my...
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Estelle, you mentioned Jerry, Liz Sheridan's had a fun career. I know you mentioned, was she telling some stories about James Dean on set?
She lived in New York, and she was a poor actress, and had an affair with another poor unemployed actor named James Dean. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, heard
of him. I think she was a jazz singer they all had interesting offstage stories. It was a nice group of people. And as I say in my book, Jerry, I was in New York and I ran into Jerry at the theater on Broadway. I went to see a Russian theater company came to New York to do The Cherry Orchard in Russian. So it was only really serious theater people who attended an event like that. And I go out during intermission and there's Jerry. So I started talking to him and he starts explaining the play to me. He knew Chekhov better than any college professor I have ever had. He knew all the characters, what they were about. I mean, he was just really erudite. This was not the man that you saw, this was not Frank Costanza. And then at the end of this whole very serious intellectual diatribe, he says to me, because this is what actors always say, so? You're Wiccan? Because that's what actors always ask each other.
Right. Yeah.
You're Wiccan?
Looking for the next gig. Speaking of that, I'd love to get your take. I know you mentioned you were able to kind of work your way at that table, as you talked about, right? Getting with as you got more recurring roles. But what was the sense on set from that first episode of The Pen, when, like you said, it wasn't very well known, to now you're in the Cadillac, where it's the number one show on television, probably twice as many millions of people watching. Could you see a difference between the way they operated? You know, you have, you know, Larry David there.
That's an interesting question. No, I didn't. They were them. They were very much them. They were friends. There were always containers of takeout Chinese food around. It was a very New York feeling on that set. The only difference I would say is in the later episodes, there were more suits around. The white guys in suits would come down and watch and see what was going on. There wasn't that much attention from them in the beginning. But then when it became this huge moneymaker, there were more of those people around. But no, Larry and Jerry did not change. They were authentic. I mean, they were, and I believe still are, authentically who they are.
So,
did you ever hear of a film called Comedian?
Jerry's movie, right?
It's a fabulous film.
Yeah.
I wish I could find a copy. I wish I could see it somewhere. It's an incredible film about what it means to be a comic, I think. And what's interesting about it, Jerry has a life. He's got a wife. He's got kids, a lot of friends, a lot of loyal friends. And the young guy, the guy who's desperate, who wants to make it, he's got nothing. He's got nobody. He's got, I mean, it's just a very interesting, to me, look at what it means to be an artist.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. Jerry's a fascinating guy. And obviously he took his career and put it onto a show, if you will. His life was within a show. So I know he wanted to showcase that. So speaking of life, Bronx, New York, right, Annie? So you got started in this business, what, the 50s?
No. I had another whole life before. I was a piano teacher.
You're kidding.
I was a piano teacher and a married lady. But I'd always loved theater and movies. And my husband is in films. My husband has produced some low budget films and one film that actually won an Oscar called Babette's Feast, one of the 10 greatest movies ever made. And if you haven't seen it, rush out and not rush out. You can stream it. Babette's Feast, that won the Oscar for best foreign film. It's from, my husband is Danish.
And you married an Oscar winner.
I think it in 1989. Well, it wasn't when I married him.
you developed that, see? So that's unbelievable. Piano teacher, then boom. When did you get the acting bug, if you will?
Know. I was already a young mom. I started late. So actually, all the people that I compete with, including the woman who turned down the role of Seinfeld, they had been in the business much longer than I have. So I've always been trying to catch up. You see, it took me a long time. That's why I have to live to be 100, because I'm just catching up. I have the career now that I wish I had in my 50s. You know, I have to stay alive for a very long time working on it.
You're funny, Annie.
What other shows do you think? Do you think any shows compare to Seinfeld? What are your other, do you have other favorite sitcoms? Like, I like Modern Family. I loved the Big Bang Theory is up there for me. And was it the Mindy Project? Oh, and Frasier. Let's say those.
That was more Cheers than Frasier, but...
of course, Cheers. Cheers is classic. Yeah. Again, family. Again, Frasier, family. Modern Family. Hello.
What about Mr. Belvedere?
I never watched it, but I know it's about.
Yeah, listen. Yeah, I think there's a lot of good ones, and then you know, even just shows like The Sopranos or things like that, which are tied.
Oh, I love television. I'm a television addict. I watch every night from 10 to 2. Right now, I'm on The Bear. Oh my god.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh my god.
That's
I love television. Because I've stopped going to the movies, because the movies are for teenage boys. You know what I mean? And television is for grownups. More and more, that's the difference. I mean, I don't know if that's something you want to talk about on here. Do you need to stick? Do your followers want you to stay on Seinfeld?
That's it. They're very loyal. We stay in our
lane. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to hear about it.
They don't want to talk about anything else. But
stay in our lane.
But I mean, listen, you know.
I mean, incredible.
Netflix bought Seinfeld for what, $500 million in 2020? Like, clearly it's still relevant, and it's, you know, they're bringing it to a new generation. So, you know, that TikTok following you mentioned, they're learning about you in multiple ways, but, you know, possibly from Netflix on Seinfeld as well, I gather.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. The TikTok generation is such a new thing. To me, I'm not sure what that would. Do you think that they watch Seinfeld? Do you think they watch the reruns? You think they watch Seinfeld? I mean,
they're getting there.
Young.
I think they're getting there, some of them. I think they're kind of more into Friends for some reason, but I think Seinfeld's making a move.
What that is.
You know, I'm curious with that kind of, you know, your love of television and your knowledge and your wisdom that you've already showed us all about and your solo, plays you were talking about and your book. I mean, you have a lot of built up wisdom and things like that. I'm wondering if any of those, did you have any conversations with Julia on set to kind of bestow some of that, wisdom to the younger generation, you know, especially in the pen when she was very, you know, still kind of green as far as Seinfeld went at sitcom.
That much, because I didn't have scenes with her, or that many scenes with her.
Yeah.
But I do remember when we did the airplane thing. First of all, I have to say, I admire her so much. I think she's a great actress and a great reader of material. I love Veep. I mean, but the airplane episode that I did with her, she was pregnant at the time. And I don't know if you remember, she did a lot of physical comedy in that. She's falling over in the aisle. She's falling. And she just did that. She gave that 400%. And I was just very impressed with how brave she was, how she just didn't hold back. And the only conversation I remember having with her was something about pregnancy, something about having a baby, because I am a mother, and she was about to become one. That's all I remember, actually. But again, pleasant and friendly and lovely in every way. These were nice people. They were nice people.
Yeah,
Jason's a very devoted family man. Very good father, very devoted husband. I don't know that much about Michael. I didn't hang out that much with him.
Yeah, I mean, nice people, and obviously they hired nice people like yourself. And what can we say, Annie? Love you. Make sure you get the book, everybody. It's out on Amazon.
Read the subtitle. Now. Read the subtitle of the book.
You're gonna kill me. You think I can? Humor, heart, and chutzpah.
Chutzpah.
There he is, a nice Irishman saying chutzpah.
From an accidental influencer.
I'm going to say it. The Book of Annie, humor, heart, and chutzpah from an accidental influencer.
Beautiful.
Well, you've certainly been a great influencer, and I can't wait to see what's next with you on TikTok, Annie.
Okay, this was fun. I hope you got what you needed. And
of course.
It was fun for me. You make me feel much better about my role as Doris Klompas. It was quite something. Thank you. I appreciate that. You gave me a gift.
Thanks, Annie.
Thank you, Annie.
Okay.
This was great.
Tell Benny hi.